if anybody knows, that is a near, damn near perfect Bjork impression. Zach doesn't, but I'm going to need all of you out there to give me pats on the back and tell me I'm good.
Get at me on the socials and tell me how wrong
get
I am for not knowing
Bjork. Get
at me
through Zach's socials.
Come attack me on Blue Sky. Yeah. Tell me how bad I am for not knowing Bjork.
Or no, tell Zach to tell me how good I am at being Bjork.
And welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and you will never guess what I saw the other day in the wild.
A beaver.
No, but...
You're right, I'll never guess it.
You're not far off.
Really?
Well, it was...
200 beavers, like in the Rio Grande.
You done?
Yes, I'm done.
It was somebody wearing a meerkat shirt.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. And I was like, hey, it was one of the teens.
Oh.
It's one of the teens I work with. And I went, were you wearing a shirt with a meerkat on it? She went, yes. And like explained that it's a friend of her dad's, like the.
The meerkat's a friend of her dad's?
Yeah. Smart ass. Shut the fuck up. Let me cook. Friend's dad is in a band called something, something in the Meerkats. And that was the shirt for the band. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Now you're making all sense. Anyways, I was just happy to see a meerkat in the wild. That's all.
Legit rage.
For those of you at home, one of Zach's hobbies is specifically rage baiting me. He loves it.
I mean, I feel like that's the sign of true love, when your favorite thing is to watch your partner fly into the ceiling with rage.
I would never, ever do that to you. Gaslight, yes. All day, every day. I love
certainly.
I love lying to you. Rage baiting? Never. I'm nice, Zach.
You lie to me?
I'm manipulative.
You lie to me,
only
Cassie?
Because I love you so much.
Well, let's see if you have any lies for me today as we watch Series 8, Episode 10, In the Forest of the Night.
I forgot we were recording a podcast.
we were just being mean. Mm-hmm. Just bullying each other. Mm-hmm. No, we are watching Doctor Who. We are watching In the Forest of the Night. A kind of, I don't know if controversial is the right word, but divisive.
Forest of the Night. It just sounds like lyrics from an 80s, like glam rock.
It does. I do think so. God, I try to think of specifically like what it makes me think of. But it's actually it's based on a poem. It was a line taken from a poem.
And I like to dance in the forest of the night.
Like I said, this episode is pretty divisive. I know a lot of people who think this is like Capaldi's worst episode. I don't think that's the case. I don't love it, but I don't think it's his worst. But I know especially a lot of the like writing staff on the show, Stephen Moffat in particular, defended this episode, and some people were like insulting it. That Moffat thinks this episode is very beautifully written. He thinks it's poetic, is what he calls it, and then he thought that with time it would become a more revered episode. I don't know if that's true, but I know that a lot of people have feelings about it, and I'm curious to see what your feelings are going to be about it. I think part of that is that this episode heavily features children, and that could be really hit and miss for some people.
Yeah. Well, can I ask if the children are good actors?
I think they're fine.
Okay.
Like they're not phenomenal, but I can't think. There's no Chloe Webber. I am in your brain, and I'm whispering for some reason.
Well, yeah, but there's also the no Millie Bobby Browns in it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any Millie Bobby Browns. Yeah, I don't think there's any like Fines in here.
Fines.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any. I thought you were being kind of gross for a second. I was like, whoa.
Yeah. I don't think
she's an adult now, but we're talking about a child.
No, in terms of like you found like a really good
gem.
Yeah.
A real talent. oh my God, like Miss Alyssa Liu, who I am absolutely enamored by right now. Figure skater, but also just America's sweetheart. She better not fuck it up because she's also representing the alt community too. Oh my God, she better not fuck it up.
Yeah, none of them are like phenomenal actors, but they
none
are.
None of them are bad.
None of them are bad. I don't. None of them jumped out at me as being like any
horrendous to
yeah,
watch.
They all do fine. Like some of them are maybe a little stiff. Some of them might be able to. I'm sure an actor could do better, but I don't. None of them. I didn't leave my rewatch of the episode being like, ugh, these kids, which, you know, already a good sign in my book. So I'm curious to see what you're going to think. So maybe we should get through the Cassie Perfassi a little bit.
Forest of the Night.
Actually, I say, what do you think happens in the Forest of the Night? Like just going off the title, going off the vibe I've given you of it being a lot of children.
It's a forest and it's night. And there are kids there.
This is a saxophone in the background, like really going at it.
I mean, you didn't seem to have much of a reaction when I did my Bjork impression. So
I wouldn't pick up on it. I know nothing about Bjork.
What?
Yeah, I know. I know nothing about Bjork. I know that she's a weird.
Earlier, though.
Well, other things I wouldn't have picked up on it. I don't know.
Oh, you just thought it was me being a little silly.
Yeah, I just thought she would be a goof.
Oh my God! Hey, everybody, Zach doesn't know. Zach doesn't know Bjork.
Welcome to the new podcast. Who is my Bjork?
My God, Zachary, she talks like this.
That's the thing. I know she's like a slightly weird Eastern European woman, but that's all I know about her.
And she does so many beautiful things with her music. I feel like my Bjork is your Werner Herzog. Yes!
I would like to see the Bjorky.
And I would like to see the Werner Herzog.
Because we should just do the rest of the podcast in our respective Eastern European character voices.
Once you, I believe she's Icelandic, if I'm not mistaken. But once you start, you cannot stop. What happens in the Forest of the Night? I mean, I don't want to say like weapons before weapons, but it does feel if there's a lot of kids, then it's like something is happening and we're either all kids on bikes and we're looking for some kind of monster, something, some folklore, like, oh, and they say that if you listen real close, you can hear the ladies screaming for their lives. Like, you know, the weird things that then kids are like, oh, let's go see the hanging tree. And it's like, you should not go and see the hanging tree. Just that's no. So it's either something like that, or it is specifically some kind of alien possession over children.
Like making, E.T., like E.T., but dark.
Yeah. Am I supposed to, is this the
no, Perfassi? It's just a question. The actual Perfassi does tell you a little bit about what happens in it.
Oh, okay. Well.
The episode's basic premise is that the trees are doing something strange. I have some choices here, but what do you think the trees could be doing that are strange, Cassie?
Dancing.
Like talking. That like that bit from the Disney sing-along with the dancing trees.
Either that or even scarier, they have faces and they are actively like talking. Have I ever shown you Itch Up Puffin stuff?
I mean, you've shown me some. You've shown me anything with dancing trees. I do think
they're not dancing trees. They are talking trees specifically.
Oh, okay.
And every so often there are the good trees and then there are the bad trees. When Jimmy's running through the forest of the bad trees, they just kind of reach out and grab them. I think about that a lot.
So,
but the good trees, like this one that just talks like this, baby. She's like Janice. Oh my God, that's why I like Janice so much.
I do like knowing that me bringing up the trees from the Disney sing-along VHS tape has only done one of two things. It's either like totally lost people who have no idea what I'm talking about, or if someone's like does know and they're driving right now, they are just screaming in their car with the memory of the traumatic childhood memory of those dancing
trees.
That's
why I didn't go on Haunted Mansion for so many years, because that song, that part of the sing-along scared the bejeebies out of me. And also, bone to pick really quick. That sing-along is supposed to be for Magic Kingdom. And the Haunted Mansion is ours here in LA.
Well, that's rude.
Yeah, right?
Thieves. Floridian thieves.
Yeah.
So the actual, here are the options for what the trees do. The option A, the trees start walking.
Okay.
Option B, the trees are rapidly dying.
Okay.
Or option C, the trees are everywhere.
Oh, they're walking. They're moving.
They got their feet. They're doing the.
Yeah, they're
going to the ant meeting.
Yeah. Well, because trees can move. It's gross and scary and weird. But like they technically can just kind of move.
Pick up their skirts and twiddle away.
Yeah. All right. Scary as hell. Have you seen it happen?
So the trees get up and start walking. That is Cassie's prediction.
The trees, they can walk.
And as I mentioned, this episode features a lot of children. One child in particular has something of a vision of a solar flare that's coming to attack the Earth. But they don't communicate this in words. How does a child communicate a solar flare, Cassie?
Oh, it's a drawing, for sure. Drawing.
What's the drawing of?
Is this a bonus point?
I'm just curious. Like what do you picture this drawing looking like?
I mean, I like the image specifically of the sun wearing a pair of jeans. Solar flares, if you would.
Hey there. I'm the sun and I'm wearing pants.
The sun's got cool glasses and is smoking a cigarette and wearing pants.
And the pants say cool guy on the butt.
Yeah, in gems.
All right, so you think it's a drawing? The child's done like a little cartoon?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
That makes some. Otherwise, what would it be? Like an interpretive cousin dance? Like it. Like, what else do kids do?
Fair. I mean, I could see it being like, the child's mute and they're like pointing at the sun really angrily.
Yeah, but you didn't give me the context that that's kid true. Wasn't. So is the kid mute?
No, because
you
did not, say it. Kid is not mute.
Okay,
no.
So it's a drawing then. Absolutely.
All right. It is a drawing. All right. We will find out together if the trees start get up and walking around while a child draws a picture of an angry sun as we watch In the Forest of the Night. Today's episode of Who's My Doctor is brought to you by The Lawyer X.
I am the Lawyer X. I speak for the fees, and I'm filing a lawsuit against all the trees. There's property damage from their big greedy roots. It's time to get payback with class action suits. That oak dropped an acorn, an assault on your head. That pine shed a needle, you could have been dead. I'll sue every orchard from here to the seas. I don't hug the trunks, I just garnish the leaves. If a branch hits your head or a root trips your toe, just call the Lawyer X to get that green dough.
It was the forest of the night. The night. Oh, yeah.
It was the forest of the night, saving the planet from a solar flare.
We are back from In the Forest of the Night. So what do you think, Cassie?
It reminded me of a 90s movie.
I can understand that.
Yeah, it had big, like, Fern Gully, Once Upon a Forest energy. And I don't know if it's because it was a fairy tale in a forest and it just.
I mean, there's a lot of fairy tale allusions going on in it.
Oh, yeah.
The doctor references Hansel and Gretel. Maeve is literally a child in a red jacket running from wolves.
Yes. Who can see fairies. We are older than anything in this world.
The heart of the forest just appears to be a fairy circle.
Yeah.
Arden is also a reference to a forest in Shakespeare. I can't remember specifically which play. I think it's 12th Night. Yeah, but it's a lot of old English, really old European folktale allegories in it.
Oh, yeah.
Knowing that people find this very divisive, where do you fall on it, if I may ask?
Can I say that I'm right in the middle?
That's kind of where I'm at, too. I think there's a lot of good going on here, but there's also some really anchors weighing the episode down.
Yes.
The biggest anchor for me is the very end. It's, I think, Like, I don't
thought of you came to me.
Yeah, like every part of that doesn't work. Like the mom standing perfectly still, yelling that it's Annabelle's name. The sister saying like the thought of you came. Like they should be running towards her excitedly. The fact that she's hidden behind plants that disappear with the fairy energy, I think that's really dumb. The fact that she just stands there and smirks at them. Nothing about that very ending works. It's so bad that it almost like
that's why
sours the whole episode.
That's that I think is why it reminds me so much of. It's cheesy in a way that I'm so used to those like those types of films being cheesy.
Yeah.
Like there is a part of me that's like it's dumb in a way that I can kind of respect.
Yeah.
But also.
Like, I don't think this is I've seen some criticisms of the episode as boring. I don't think that's the case. I do think it's a more understated episode than some other episodes have been.
Yes.
I think it's honestly, I think it's biggest weakness that it follows, in my opinion, two great episodes. And this one is just OK.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's as nearly as bad as Time Heist. I think Time Heist is still one of my least favorites we've watched in a while.
I can agree. I can agree with that. Full heartedly.
I think there are some fun aspects to it. Like, I like that the story is really about Danny and Clara being teachers,
but also like we really see where Clara's priorities lie when she is in a Whovian situation but needing to be an adult. Mm-hmm. And not an adventurer.
She will choose the adventure.
Danny
is the opposite, though. Danny sees his responsibility as being towards these children every step of the way.
Which also, in terms of character, like, what am I thinking of? Like, refining characteristics? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, because he was in the fucking military.
Yeah.
So him being like, oh, yeah, I'm enchanted. This is awesome. But I have a job to do. And that's protect these kids.
Yeah.
And make sure that they get to their parents safe and sound.
And I do like that Clara, like, I'm sure that there's a bit of a joke there that Clara finds the more paternal.
She said that.
Like,
she specifically says, like, oh, yeah, you would choose these kids. Like, you would protect the kids. And that's extremely attractive, actually. Like, she says that in the thing.
Yeah, well, what I mean is, I understand I think that's partly a joke. Partly the joke is, like, the man is being maternal right now and I'm into it. But there's also the like, I think there's a very real aspect of it where he is practicing self-control where she can't or where she recognizes that she is failing in this moment. And I do think there is part of it there. She's like, the fact that he is holding it together so well is very like respectable in an attractive way. Like, I think that's a very mature way of framing him. And they also frame it very well at the end of the episode where he's like, I have been a soldier. I have been in danger. I don't want to see cool, dangerous things anymore. I want to focus on the stuff in front of me.
It reminds me of like when you are approaching your like full adulthood and you have younger friends that are like, hey, do you want to go do this fun concert thing?
Do you
want
to go to a club?
You want to go? Yeah. Do we want to go out dancing? Like, ooh, let's like go out to dinner and then like we'll go out on the town. And then as the adult, you're like, no,
I have
like,
a bedtime.
I really like dinner sounds really fun, but like after that, I just want to go home.
I've always kind of been that way. I've never really been a.
That's because you're no fun.
Hey, you know,
you're a fuddy duddy. You are a literal professional fuddy duddy.
Dr. Fuddy Duddy.
Yeah.
I have a PhD in fuddy duddiness.
The unflappable fuddy duddy. That's you.
My degree's in fuddytude. Fuddy duddytude.
Anyways, bringing it back to the beginning of the episode, mm-hmm. I do appreciate a cold open that literally has the doctor. The show is called Doctor Who, and very seldom do we get the doctor being befuddled by the events that are happening.
Yeah, the little girl Maeve running up to the door, and the doctor. I like some of the like. They do some fun things with the dialogue. It's not, I wouldn't call them jokes, but they are just like,
do you have an appointment?
Yeah. Do you have an appointment? You need an appointment to see the doctor. They're like little, again, not jokes, but there's just like little flavors to the language throughout the episode.
I would say like, it's a nice way to have the doctor be a little sarcastic and smarmy.
Yes. And then when like Maeve is let into the TARDIS and he's like, I really thought you would have been mystified by the fact that it's bigger on the inside. And she's like, I just thought it was supposed to be bigger on the inside.
There are lots of things that other people know that I don't. And I'm just kind of used to this.
I think I wrote it down here. Everybody seems to know everything about everything except for me.
That's literally me. We just had this conversation about my two best friends being autistic know-it-alls and then me just being like, I'm just happy I know.
I'm just here. I'm a little guy.
I'm just a girl. And a little guy. But I do really like the Doctor meeting his match. A child in trees.
Yeah, and I like the Doctor being like, of course we're not in London. We're surrounded by trees. The little girl's like, but we are in London. That's where all the trees are. Come look. And she like shows him the big statue in the middle of Trafalgar Square. And you could feel the look on Capaldi's face is so like, what the fuck?
I like even the TARDIS being like, yeah, we're here. This is the center of London.
I gave you what you wanted.
Yeah, that should have been followed with like a, yeah, we're here, asshole.
Bitch. Doctor bitch.
Did I stutter? TARDIS, please relax.
God, sometimes it would be nice if the TARDIS still had her voice. She could say that. So she could just be like, Dr. Dum Dum.
Yeah, Dr. Dipshit.
So the TARDIS could go, oi. Dr. Dipshit.
I'm really glad I got you with that one.
And we find that.
But the Sonic not being able to work on trees.
Yeah, because.
The Sonic being unable to work on natural elements.
Mm-hmm, doesn't do wood.
Makes me. I love. I love when things have rules.
Mm-hmm. Especially for the Sonic screwdriver, which seems to have such few rules. They actually almost make a lot of what it does make more sense.
Oh, yes. When he's like, oh, damn. Yeah, this is literally just trees and wood and nature. And
yeah, it works with all forms of communication. But because wood doesn't have any like moving parts, it can't communicate with the trees.
Yep.
It's also why I can't unlock doors.
Yep.
Like old school wooden doors.
Oh, I love when a magic item has constraints.
Well, it's also just nice when the show brings that back. Like
when the show is self-aware enough to go, oh, this can't just be a magic wand.
Yeah, well, it's not the first time they brought up the wood thing. I don't know if you remember, they were in the library with I don't even think that was the first time, but certainly one time when they were in the library where they met River Song, Donna was super upset that the Sonic screwdriver doesn't do wood.
I do remember that now that you're saying it.
But I more like that they, because that's an established rule with the Sonic screwdriver, that the writer went, okay, the most interesting thing we can do is put the Doctor in a forest.
Yeah.
And the forest is everywhere.
Mysterious forest that shouldn't exist.
Yeah, I do wish a little bit that they played a little bit more with the space of the forest being in the middle of the city.
I mean, they kind of did. But
like, there's little signs and stuff everywhere. There's little signs of what civilization was.
What, like, because here's my thing. How would they have done that? Because this is either a, like, most backlots have forests. Mm-hmm. So if not signage and phone booths.
I think I would have liked it if maybe they had to go, like, through the forest and then into a building and then back out into the forest again. They do it a little bit with having them, like, follow along the walls of one building. I just think it would have been more fun if they had, like, played with just how much the trees were encroaching on the space. There's a little bit of it with you seeing them next to like bus stops and monuments and things like that.
Well, yeah, but you did see that when people are exiting these buildings and they're having to like push vines and weeds out of the way.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I wanted was to see a tree in somebody's house. It seems like the trees were all very polite and didn't go in the buildings. They just went through the sidewalk.
I mean, if the trees are being controlled by fairy lights. Fireflies.
Yeah, I guess they are controlled by some kind of sentient life. So it could just be like, no, those are their doors. They have to invite us in.
We have to stay outside, but we can fuck up these statues all we want.
Because I'm just thinking about like, you know, sort of, it's not just trees. It's like a whole plant life that really sprung. I mean, the trees were definitely the biggest thing, but like all sorts of plant life sprung up. Do you have any idea how many people just have a windowsill full of plants?
I haven't the foggiest. Who has a bay window full of plants?
I don't know, like maybe a dozen or so plants, some hanging from the ceiling. Let me take a look and see if I can see them from here. About six or ten.
I like whimsy, okay? Leave me out of this.
I'm just saying, I feel like that would have been a thing to see, would be just like a bay window pouring out with plants from someone's pots.
Yeah, this is you wanting to tell a joke at my expense. Again!
Maeve is another character that I have some like mixed feelings about. Because on the one hand, they do sort of make it seem like mental illness is magical. It's secretly telling
you. It is, though, Zach. Do you know how many wonderful ideas I've gotten from the different voices that just rattle around my head all the time?
You should listen to the voice in your head. Whatever they're telling you is a message from the universe.
You should run into traffic. You should clean your house.
Like, no, doctor, sometimes the voices you hear are not good voices.
No, they're all good, Zach. They're all good.
They're there to save the planet.
Yeah. 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 No, it's that.
Don't take your pills.
You shouldn't have to take my pills. Zach, according to my mom and my doctor, everything's fine. I don't need to be on medication. Now I'm making it about me.
But I do like that the way they communicate that there is something going on beyond just her being a traumatized child is by having her flap her hands around her head.
Yeah, by having an actual tic. Yes.
Where it really is just like there are she's got bugs around her. We see the bugs later that they look like little fireflies. But I just are just like, get the bugs away from my head. They're whispering at me.
I did like the line, the forest is mankind's nightmare, because actually, yes. Do you know how many people fucking go missing in forests because they wander off the like well-trodden path and then get fucking lost and then their bodies are never found? How many people... There was that story of that like little like 4-year-old kid that like wandered away and then was found like 6 months later, completely like hollow eyed and like scared looking because he was fucking alone in the forest for months.
He just had this. He found a weird ring with Elvish around it.
Like when they lost him, he was wearing like just clothes. But then when they found him, he was wearing pajamas. So like the overarching theory is like he was kidnapped and then returned. It's a fucking miracle that he was returned. But then the number of people that like there are documentations of people going off the trail and just like.
So what you're saying is
fucking
the real
right off and then. Like their bodies were never found or so their bodies were found, but in pieces because nature got to them and they were lunch for something else. But like the doctor's right. The forest is mankind's nightmare. And I truly was like that. Yes, they're in the heart of London, but also like this is a forest that I feel is both possible and impossible to get lost in. Because at the very least, there is a good chance that you can find a building. But also, if you are not good at navigation or you don't know what the word navigation fucking means. Like, do you know how scary that would be to just be like, oh, yeah, I stepped outside and now I don't know where I am.
I know my home is behind me and that's all I know.
Well, I thought my home was behind me. But since I've traveled 30 feet, the forest has grown over and I don't know where I am now.
Yeah, I do like this implication that people that go camping are like the true daredevils.
They are, Zach. People who go camping recreationally, psychopaths. I don't care if it's you being like, I just want to get close to nature. Sleep in your backyard then.
There's no bears in your backyard.
And then if they are,
there's no tigers in your backyard.
Okay, that was another thing, too, that, like, real bee in my bonnet. Like, first of all, if you're ever being pursued by a apex predator, don't fucking run. Mm-hmm. Do not ever run. Because that is exactly, like, then they're like, oh, yeah, then this bitch is prey. Get her!
For reference,
like,
for
the thing that you're supposed to do. Shush, I'm being autistic. The thing that you're supposed to do if you are like in a wild animal encounter is make yourself look as big as you can and just start screaming, not flashing a little light in its face till it goes, the light. And then it fucks right off. Like, no.
For reference, the doctor, they like hear like a wolf howl. And Clara's like, there's no wolves out here. This is London. And the doctor's like, the London with the zoo. The zoo with the pack of wolves. The zoo whose gates and bars have been smashed by trees right now.
Which also, speaking of which, do you know how quickly I would look for meerkats?
It's just something about the way the doctor phrased that was like, oh, right, the poison for Cusco, the poison specifically chosen to kill Cusco.
Cusco's yeah, but poison. If a zoo burst open, you know you wouldn't be able to find me because I'm out there looking for exotic birds and meerkats or otters. I'm going up to every gopher hole I find and going, Mr. Meerkat. Hello.
I really enjoy that plot point of pointing out that, yeah, the trees destroyed the zoo and now the zoo animals are out. But
I did like that, mostly because then it wouldn't make sense for any other reason how or why there would already be wild animals in the middle of London.
Well, it also gives the woods some kind of threat that isn't just them wandering around lost.
Also, there was only one car somehow.
There should be so many cars and bicycles and all kinds of stuff. Just
like, and the number of people that there would also be walking amok.
Yeah, for sure.
Like forest grows up overnight.
People still got to go to work.
Like, I would probably call out, just be like, hey, I literally can't drive. And also, we're not doing dress rehearsal today. Thanks. But the way that, like, at least here, perhaps things are different in the UK. Forest grows overnight. You know that there's going to be, like, a witch cult out there. So fast. There's going to be a hippie cult that's
like doomsday.
The earth is healing already. We need to keep and preserve these trees. And then there would be the capitalists that are like, oh, fuck, free trees.
Lumber, lumber.
Yeah.
But to your credit about how you deal with apex predators, after they do all this running, the doctor's then like, oh, we got to make ourselves look like we're too much of a hassle to eat. Make yourself look like a big three-headed, six-legged thing. And they go, ah.
Yeah. That's effective.
It's just like, why wasn't that the first thing you did? If you know that's what you're supposed to do, why didn't you do it?
Because it is much safer to get behind the fence.
I do like that the doctor's point was like, oh, these are zoo wolves. They don't even know how to hunt anymore. They forgot.
These are literally the skinniest wolves I've ever seen in my whole life. Yeah.
And then
in fairness, they were probably wolf dogs. Yeah, but
and so. a big tiger shows up because that's what really scares off the wolves. But then Danny scares off the tiger with the power of a flashlight.
Yeah.
Which what I love about that is the way Danny does it is just by waving the flashlight back and forth over it. And the tiger just looks like, I just said that. You're right. It does go, the light. But the face it makes is just like, ugh, this is annoying. Stop.
I'm gonna go back to my trailer. This sucks.
The tiger is making the same face that the boy was at the beginning of the episode when he's getting a flashlight shown on him in the middle of the night.
Precisely.
The little girl leads them out into what looks like a fairy circle. Like it's a circle of little trees.
It's a circle of little trees that are bound together with cobwebs.
Yes. And she's like waving her hands around, and the doctor's like, oh no, she's like reacting to something. I know what to do. I'll use the sonic screwdriver to increase local gravity around her. And it does.
And it's effective.
It turns the little voices into little fireflies that I like for like two sentences. They speak alongside Maeve. And then as soon as it's over, Maeve, I don't know if it was just the actress was being distracting, but they immediately drop her voice and have it just be the fireflies, even though her mouth is still moving. You can
still hear her.
Yeah.
But she's not talking like this anymore.
Which, again, I think it's just, I don't think it's the actress's fault. I think it was direction.
Yeah. I think it, because there is still an undercurrent of her voice.
Mm-hmm. And I think it'd be like, this is stressing me out. And when I'm stressed, I forget my anger management.
Yeah, because that is you.
I just picture him like starting to like flail around.
Start punching things.
Punching trees.
I'm confused, and that makes me hit things.
Yeah.
And then the doctor realizes that the fairies say, like, we have been here before you and we will be here long after.
We don't know who you are. Fuck off.
I do like them saying we will be here after you. And I'm like, and the doctor's like, no, you won't be. I'm going to watch all you die. I've watched you die like 5 times.
Yeah.
And that's just since the show restarted. I have seen this planet blow up so many times. But then the doctor realizes this is a natural event like the ice age. Welcome to the tree age. And so the doctor's like, I like his description is catastrophe is the metabolism of the universe. I can fight monsters. I can't fight physics.
Yeah, I liked that line, too.
Yeah. Well, because it also in the same way of like the sonic screwdriver and not being able to work on trees, it does sort of give the doctor a rule, especially because the doctor defies sort of physics as we understand it a lot. But like, it is nice to be like,
the doctor defies all sciences, but I respect the fact that the doctor does not defy natural biology.
Yeah, he doesn't create miracles.
No.
Sometimes he can pull some wibbly wobbly timey wimey bullshit, but he doesn't. Like he's not going to be like, I can't just like wave the sonic screwdriver around and make all the trees disappear.
Like when I like that when it comes to specific natural events, the doctor is like, I can't control that.
So, yeah,
because we've seen it happen a couple times, even when it was something that is what like supposed to on paper be a natural event. And then we find out isn't, mm-hmm. i.e. Pompeii. I like that when it comes down to true blue in this world's like true blue science and nature, the doctor's like, I don't know.
I can save the world in the sense that I can stop someone from invading it. I can't save the world from itself.
I can stop aliens. I can figure out complicated maths and problems. I don't understand rapid tree growth.
Yeah, and then Clara.
Don't know how Dad got there.
Clara's saying, we can use the TARDIS as a lifeboat. We can go save some people. And the doctor's like, great idea. And they run the class over to the TARDIS. And Clara's like, all right, get in. Just you, doctor. The kids are going home.
Because they want to be with their mums. Have this be the human race is saving you.
And I do like that the doctor's like, "What? I'll take you and Danny then." And Clara's like, Danny will not go anywhere without those kids. And he's like, well, I'll save you then. And Clara's like, I don't want to be the last of my kind.
Yeah, but then the doctor rebuttals with that this is my world, too. Oh, yeah, buddy. Mm-hmm. Then where were you when you were deciding if you were going to blow up the moon or not?
Well, that's the funny thing is the thing he says is I walk your earth. I breathe your air, which is what Clara said to him at the end of that episode.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, he says I walk your is like this is my world, too. I walk your earth. I breathe your air. He's just repeating the thing Clara monologued at him at the end of Kill the Moon. So he learned a lesson.
Yeah.
Good job.
I like that this episode feels like how the show would have looked if they kept it as a educational series.
Yeah, a sort of like edutainment.
This felt so specifically because they brought up the rings and the trees and like, oh, well, yeah, each ring is representative of a year in a tree's life.
This does feel very like, I don't want to call it classic Doctor Who, but there is a certain level of like,
if they had kept that spirit of like, oh, this is edutainment.
Mm-hmm.
You're learning a thing, but this is also sci-fi. So like some of it's going to be a little crazy town. But and perhaps that is why so many people have opposing thoughts about it is because it is so specifically, it feels targeted at the like, let's pretend for a hot second that Doctor Who was a show meant to be educational in this particular context, because we have so many kids. It's very easy to have shots where the doctor is literally lecturing these kids. And it feels very academic and it feels like something that you would see on PBS.
Yeah. because even like more than just the rings on the tree thing, if you want to get something slightly more mature, I guess is the best way for it. More mature is, I guess, is the best description for it, because they're not just teaching you the simple like, oh, the tree ring thing. They also teach you about two moments in history, the Tunguska event and the Karaka impact, which are two moments where basically asteroids hit the planet, and they were sort of big news stories, but instead of causing catastrophe, they just knocked over a bunch of trees. So there is sort of
is
like
this we've something taught you, that you looked up, or did you just know that?
Well, no, they described it in the episode.
Okay,
because he says, "What do these events have in common?" And the little girl's like, "That they're really scaring us right now." And he's like, "No, trees." Every time that there's some cosmic event that's supposed to destroy the Earth, trees are there to stop it. Which I appreciate the element of truth. Mm-hmm. To that like he took some real world history and some real world science and made some fantastical gobbledygook out of it. But
yeah,
you know, in the same way, like they teach you the trees, they teach you a little bit of science and a little bit of history, like Doctor Who was meant to.
Yeah, which I understand. I understand if you don't like that angle for the show.
Yeah.
How this would be an episode that you simply do not like.
Well, because I also know that one of the criticisms is that when you really get down to it, that means this episode has no threat. It's them walking.
The episode doesn't have a threat other than the wolves and the tiger that can be dissuaded with a flashlight.
Yeah, it's them wandering through the forest being like, this is scary. What's scary about it? We got to figure out what's scary and wrong with this. And then it's like, oh.
We've had episodes like that before, though.
Yeah. I agree with you. But I see the side of it, but I agree with you that it's not, I don't think it's boring. I actually think I think it's a good every once in a while to have an episode of the show where it's not some alien threat. Because in fact, this is actually the first episode where we haven't had like some alien be the threat in a while.
Yeah.
It's just a thing that's happened on Earth.
We have our own solar system that is the threat.
Yeah. So there's a part of it that I really appreciate it. It being that I like that quite a bit.
It's like I hesitate to call it a nothing episode because there is stuff in it. But like sometimes you need those episodes in between, not even filler, because stuff still happens. That is important.
Mm-hmm.
But those ones where you're not like where the threat is non-existent because it's also part of the human condition,
yeah,
is to fear things that aren't real.
Like there's a very like when they talk about fairy tales, there is a very like the forest is unknown and that's what makes it scary.
Because you can be afraid of the forest. I encourage you to be afraid of the forest.
That's where the witches live.
Don't go in there. Do not whistle. Do not play music in the forest.
Don't walk in any tree rings covered in cobwebs.
Yeah, just. You know, there are certain forests.
No matter what the voices tell you.
There are certain forests that you should be deeply respectful of because they are some of the oldest things on this earth. I'm still shocked that this show has never done an episode based in Appalachia.
Yeah, there's.
I am absolutely baffled that there hasn't been because that is rife. Unless the writers are like, oh, we don't fuck with Appalachia. We don't want that shit to be real. We don't want to anger whatever's in there.
We don't have to. We don't want to go work with the Americans that live there. They're not scared of the Appalachian mountains. They're scared of the Appalachian people.
Fair. Absolutely. Did you know that the Appalachian mountains have been part of the Earth's geography since Pangaea?
Interesting.
Yes. There's so much scary stuff over there, Zach.
Speaking of being scared of people, I don't know how I feel about the solution to the people are about to start using chemicals to burn the trees down, to like melt the trees down.
Have a little girl phone call.
Yeah, the class project Save the Earth. And it's the little girl doing the phone call, but it ends. So just this little girl calls up every phone on the planet and it ends with her saying,
be less scared,
be more trusting. I'm like, I would start throwing hands.
I would throw away my phone. I would not answer that call. I would bury my phone in the earth because a little child is calling my number. First of all, how did you get this number? Second of all, how do I know you're not a little like black eyed child that is trying to like rob me of house and home?
Be less scared.
Be more trusting. Be more scared. Trust no one.
Be less scared. Be more trusting. Can I come in?
Yeah, no, fuck off. Get bent. Leave. Go somewhere else. Good day. And Annabelle, come home. Thanks.
Yeah, I do like that little of like, my sister is missing and I have this one opportunity to talk to everybody on the planet. Please come home. And then we see the doctor like invites all the kids to come watch and they're like, no, thanks. I want to go see. I miss my mom.
Yeah, I kind of miss my mom, too.
I slightly miss my mom.
Yeah.
So authentically 12.
Oh, yeah.
The doctor and Clara end up watching the solar flare alone together. Going way back here, I know that I had mentioned that the trees were everywhere in my question.
They were in the ocean as well.
In the ocean. I'm like, how?
Kelp, sea forests.
Even we can't get down there. What do you mean the trees are down in the Atlantic?
Floating trees?
There's a tree just like erupted through the Titanic's wreckage right now.
Yeah, my thought was that it was just a bunch of trees on foot. Because it also, not only were there trees, but there was also soil in places where they shouldn't be. And there was no broken ground.
Yeah.
So my thought was, oh, the trees and the dirt. So there is just, for like a full 24 hours... there is no sunlight getting in through the ocean because it's now covered in dirt and trees. That was my understanding. Or kelp forests, which means that there were so many happy otters and little sea lions.
And that's the world we're going to live in.
And so many things for them to hold on to so they don't get lost.
And then we watch the solar flare roll over the earth. Cut to someone watching on video and it's Missy being like, ooh, that's a surprise. I do love surprises.
I'm not going to give you any of my feelings on Missy because right now you have that little smug, I know something. No, I'm not going to tell. I'm not going to play your game. So you know what I thought about it? I don't like it. I don't like her. I don't trust her. I don't understand what's happening. And I don't like what I don't know.
I mean, I will say, I don't feel like you're supposed to like or trust her. She certainly feels like a
you know the answer. You do not have any say in this.
Well, but the doctor's her boyfriend.
Yeah, okay. Whatever you say, fucker.
To end the episode, I mean, before the like bad ending, I do think there is the much better ending is when Clara, the doctor, are standing on her balcony and they watch as the trees all disappear into the little fairy light energy.
It's Thanos snap.
I'll get Thanos snapped. And Clara's like, what are we going to do about this? And the doctor's like, you're going to forget about it. The human superpower is forgetting things. She's like, we're not going to forget an overnight forest. He's like, you forgot it last time and you turned it into stories. And I was like, doctor, I want to agree with you, but people have like... kids were taking pictures with their phones in the story. Everyone has a camera now.
Yeah. Like there is new. You actively show worldwide news coverage. Yeah,
worldwide news coverage. And on top of that, there's going to be some people who are fucking terrified of their phones now because of that little girl.
Yeah. And also there was a soccer game that couldn't happen because the forest ruined the field. They are not going to forget about the soccer game that didn't happen.
The football club fans are certainly going to be pissed about that for a while.
Yeah. People will forget. I mean, in fairness, one of my favorite superpowers is forgetting things so that way I can enjoy them all over again. It makes me deeply worried about when I'm an old person and then I'm forgetting my own name, but still.
But I do like his point that if you remembered how things felt, you'd stop having wars and stop having babies.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I was like, that's a part I do appreciate. Like, that's a very poetic thought. And I do agree with Moffat. Like, if that's the stuff he's talking about when he's saying this episode's very poetically written, I do really like, because it's a very like, humans forget things, both good and bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, not because of the aftermath, but because life has to go on.
Yeah.
And so I really like you. If you remember how things felt, you'd stop having wars and stop having babies, which, you know, I just think it's a great line. I kind of wish that's where the episode ended instead of
that bush disappears and my sister's behind it.
I mean,
I think it would be better if that came before Doctor and Clara on the balcony.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, because that's where the episode ends, and because it's so stiff and poorly directed, like, compared to the rest of the, because I actually really like a lot of the direction for most of this episode.
Like, you were correct. The kids are not phenomenal, but they are not horrible.
Yeah. I really like the little redheaded girl that's
Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby.
find X. It's right there.
At the top. It's not lost.
No, find the value of X.
Why are you asking me everything? Give someone else a chance.
Also, Danny writes X's in a weird way.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Give me the ick.
Like, Danny is an otherwise, like, outstanding lover, except for the part where he makes his X's out of two C's.
Why?
I hate that. Well, because I, like, when I had a math professor, they would not do just like a normal like cross X. Mm-hmm. They would have it be a little squiggly, just mm-hmm. so that way you could differentiate it from multiplication,
mm-hmm.
which I understand.
Yeah.
But two C's?
Two C's, that's Sam, incorrect. Butt to butt?
That's incorrect. That's how you draw a little caricature having crossed eyes if you're doodling.
So what we've learned here is that Danny is better at impulse control, at being, you know, straightforward. And Clara, the English teacher, writes X's like a normal person.
I am still like, I know that the book will drop. The other shoe will drop eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see Danny and Clara have a much bigger argument about how she is actively lying to him about spending time with the doctor.
Because I will say, I do appreciate that being Danny seeing, like, she's been lying to me. Because she saw the doctor last Friday. And I have proof because the books she grades are here on his TARDIS dated from last Friday.
Yeah.
So, like, I know that she was here. But he's not, like,
I'm not going to blow up at her right now because I don't want to completely ruin these children.
Yeah. The specific thing he says is, I just want to know the truth. I don't care what it is. I just want to know it. Which there's a part of that's like, that's incredibly mature to be like, I understand that you're lying to me and I understand why you lied to me, but I need you to tell me the truth.
Yeah.
But don't tell me now. I want you to think about it. Which there's a part of it. It's like, I know that he's saying it very like, you know, politely, very like, I'm a good boyfriend and I'm trying to be patient right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem. It's like, I want you to sit and think about what you did.
And think about what you will say.
I then love come back that, and though. Be honest with me.
I love that. Man, I'm so excited. I'm so excited for when, like, when we are in a more, like, not parental position, but like when our little nephew gets old enough that we can start like being hard.
All right, children, come in here, line up.
I did really appreciate too that Danny is having them march through the forest
with his little military cadet song. Yeah.
because right now we're working on Seussical. All I could hear was, I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam. I am.
It's very silly.
I do not like green eggs and ham.
But yeah, I think that episode is underrated, but not incredible, which is a very interesting way to put it.
It truly, truly to me feels like this is how the show would be if they had stuck with the original direction of having the Doctor be a Bill Nye the Science Guy, Miss Frizzle type.
Yeah, I could agree with that.
So it is nice to be like, oh,
cool, we can literally, we don't have to look through the looking glass. We can put on this episode and see what the show might have looked like mm-hmm. if they had stuck with that direction, which I do like.
Mm-hmm.
I like having that opportunity to see that. Do I think that the show would have benefited from going in that direction? No.
I like it as a sometimes food, but I
like it being a primarily fantasy show, which is also ironic considering that this episode is very fantasy driven.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, if we are dealing with forces of nature, and those forces of nature are very inherently magical.
Mm-hmm. I know that you're not super into the Missy mystery right now.
No, I'm not.
But the good news is, well, I shouldn't say you're not real. I think you're probably, I assume that you are curious about it.
I'm interested in the same way of like, because I'm actively doing it right now where we watched a show. It's short, so it wasn't difficult to finish. But now I'm rewatching it because I'm like, oh, I understand better now.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that I can go back and rewatch things and like pause, read things, reflect.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like that I don't understand the mystery right now, but I am excited for when I do understand it and I can either reflect upon what I've seen and go, oh, okay.
Well, the good news is you don't have to wait very long for that mystery though, because we find out next episode. Next episode is the two-part finale of this season, and it is going to come back and finally answer your question as to who Missy is.
Oh, yay. Can't wait.
I'm personally very curious to see how you're going to respond to it, but I guess we'll find out about that on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Is it going to be make me the same kind of angry where I have to get up and walk around the room?
I guess we'll find out.
Oh, no.
I genuinely don't know. That's the thing, is I genuinely don't know how you're going to respond to it.
No.
I hope you're going to like it, but I don't know.
Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Glad you didn't get lost in the woods listening to this podcast. At least, I don't think you did. I'm in your device right now. I cannot see you. Either way, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much again for your support. Special thanks go to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, Travis Aiken, and Daniel Lindgren. Next week, Cassie finally gets to learn who Missy is. How do you think she'll react to it? Let me know in the comments. Until then, I will see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are still Who's Days.